on the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
To New Zealand, to Waikato University, to Ruben Steff, a senior lecturer at Waikato in geopolitics, to educate me about the world from the point of view of the North Island or the South Island, New Zealand. This is 4 hours or more by air from the mainland of Australia, which is 24 hours by air, I believe, from where I'm sitting, but I've never done the trip. It's a pleasure to welcome Ruben here at the beginning of 2024. There's a new government in place, and that new government has a foreign policy that's part of its economic policy. So I begin by asking in general, Ruben, a very good day to you. The foreign policy of New Zealand, is there a word that characterizes it? Because over these last years, there's been the question of New Zealand's reluctance to do with nuclear weapons, with nuclear energy, reluctance to do with entangling with rivalries in the rest of the world. Is there a word today that describes this new government? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. That's a tough question. I think from an external viewpoint, what a word might be normalizing might be how I think many countries around the world see the trajectory of New Zealand's foreign policy, that we have come from the 1980s of this foreign policy which has sought independence, or at least a greater level of independence from our traditional allies over things like nuclear-powered vessels, nuclear weapons, being kind of part of the Five Eyes and the Western, broader Western alliance, if you will, but always seeking to be a step removed. And that's for domestic reasons. It's part of our national identity to some degree, but it's also because of our external considerations, foreign policy and economic considerations, especially about trade to China and to Asia more broadly, where by being distinguished from the rest of the Western world, New Zealand believes it opens doors, trading opportunities and so on, allows us to have a unique relationship perhaps with, say, China that ensures that while Australia might be punished on trade for certain things, New Zealand could stay free of that. But that seems to be changing. In recent years, as I mentioned a bit on your show before, New Zealand has been subtly aligning itself closer and closer towards Australia and the US once again. That has kicked off a bit of a debate down here. But the new government, led by the National Party, who've been out of power for 6 years, this is our more traditional conservative government, now in coalition with New Zealand First, our kind of populist party, if you will, and the ACT Party, which is a far-right libertarian party, they have seemed comfortable in the recent few weeks to signal very strongly a more pro-US tilt. We're seeing on social media constant posting of videos and images of our officials alongside American officials. Our Prime Minister's first meeting with the Australian Prime Minister only a few weeks ago, there was a pledge to increase interoperability, to look for opportunities in the AUKUS partnership, which New Zealand isn't yet part of, but may be entering into Pillar 2 in the coming months, potentially. New Zealand is looking at opportunities there. Our Prime Minister also told the Australian Prime Minister, at least in the press conference, that New Zealand would look to carry its own weight on security issues. So there's a kind of normalization underway, you might say. Now, that is leading to controversy domestically, but I think internationally, at least amongst our traditional partners, it's probably very welcome.
In preparation for this conversation, I've been reading a new book about the Italy campaign in 1943-1944, the Eighth Army under Montgomery initially, the Fifth Army under Mark Clark. And I smiled all the way through when the New Zealand regiments got involved, and even a Maori regiment, the 24th, yep, in 1943. Yep. So New Zealand was an integral part of the blood and treasure for the Commonwealth once upon a time. Is that still a vivid memory in New Zealand, your participation in the very rough go in Italy in 43 and 44? A lot of casualties.
Not really, John. I mean, New Zealand's sort of self-identity in recent years has been kind of forged around Gallipoli, especially. Gallipoli, the Battle of Gallipoli in World War One.
Right.
When, you know, us, the French and the British and the Australians sought to knock the Ottoman Empire out of the war and ended up in this hellacious battle that we end up losing, that led to, during that battle, it led Kiwi soldiers to realise there was a point of cultural difference between us and the Australians and the Brits and so on. That is highly remembered in New Zealand. There are memorials every year for it. There's dawn ceremonies. Every New Zealand museum will have something about Gallipoli and World War One. World War Two, for some reason, John, is almost wholly overlooked, even though World War Two is actually the conflict where Australia and New Zealand, there was a real existential threat there from the Japanese expanding empire and its battles into Guadalcanal and so on. I and some others have been making the case that, look, New Zealand actually needs to start remembering other parts of our history, not just Gallipoli. We need to be reconsidering and elevating consciousness around especially World War II, because that was a real seminal conflict and New Zealand was somewhat lucky, I guess, to be on the right side of history. But, John, you say our contributions to these conflicts are very significant. I mean, in World War One, something like 100,000 New Zealanders went off to war, about 10% of the population. A massive contribution. Ditto in World War II, I think it was 150,000 soldiers and nurses from New Zealand went off to fight abroad. A massive contribution at the time out of a population of only 1 million people. So, no, these things, they're remembered by part of the New Zealand population. But that is part of the population that's probably already, you might say, a bit more conservative culturally, does not have a knee-jerk negative reaction to, you know, the Crown, to the Commonwealth, to the Western world, and so on. But our media is driven by clicks these days, as I'm sure you'll know. The same with the American media. Driven by clicks, driven by a large amount of nonsense. The culture war has come here in recent years. Entertainment is, you know, people are distracted by many things these days. So there is a need to kind of recenter and make sure we don't forget some of these major parts of New Zealand's history and our, I think, deep interconnection historically and presently to our traditional partners, allies, to the rules-based international order, and all that goes back throughout the entire 20th century.
We have a couple of minutes. There's a big vote in Taipei, Taiwan, within hours, and that vote is to determine the next presidency of Taiwan, but also as a way of repudiating the aggression from mainland China. Is that a big story in New Zealand, this vote in the Western Pacific? We have a minute.
No, not at all, John. You could go look online at New Zealand major news sites. I mean, look, you might see a headline buried somewhere in the page, but it is far from a major story at all. There is a bit of focus about what's going on in the Middle East at the moment. But no, world affairs, major world events, conflicts can drop out of the New Zealand media consciousness and thus the public consciousness for long periods of a time.
5 million people in two great, big, beautiful islands from the photographs that I look. Ruben Steph is my guide, and there's much more to learn. I do mention that Charles III, the King of England, is the monarch of New Zealand and will eventually touch down and visit his people in New Zealand, and we have much to discuss beforehand. Ruben Steph, a senior lecturer at Waikato University. I'm John Batchelor.